Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. For those of you following social media and the rest of the world, we had a big announcement that I made earlier this week. Many of you know that we recently suffered the loss of Art Bell. The radio legend passed away on Friday the 13th, apropos that would be the day Art Bell would go. And his show, Midnight in the Desert, which has been on for about 3 years, his current host, Heather Wade, was dealing with grief and having a lot of issues with this. And there was a parting of the ways between Heather Wade and Midnight in the Desert. And I was asked last Thursday if I would be interested in helming the Monday through Friday Midnight in the Desert program. So as of Monday, I am the official full-time host of Midnight in the Desert. So you guys get more paranormal than ever before. I will now be on Monday through Friday, 11 p.m. Central to 2 a.m. For those of you out on the West Coast, that's much earlier. You get 9 p.m. to midnight, so you can check it out. MidnightInTheDesert.com is the way to check that out. And make sure that you listen along. It's a live show Monday through Friday. Then the shows go into an archive program that they've got set up. It's $5 a month if you're interested in getting access to the archives of the show. So go check it out, my beautiful army of darkness, and make that a part of your world. It is a one-man show. That is what they wanted, and I will be filling that. But Tim and I will continue doing Beyond the Darkness. We're going to make that a weekend edition show. So Saturdays and Sundays, you'll be delivered this show, and that'll begin next week. So this week, you get your shows normal Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then next week we'll be back Saturday and Sunday with the best in paranormal talk radio. We will continue doing our Parashare and Supernatural news, as we know you guys love that and want us to stick to that. And Sunday nights will be interviews and theater of the mind. So now you've got 7 days a week. And then, of course, our True Crime Tuesday program will continue. So you'll always hear Tim and I together on Beyond the Darkness and on True Crime Tuesday going forward. That's it. Now, many of you are asking, why the big change? Why didn't you just stay with Podcast One? And the fact of the matter really is that Podcast One is just not really set up for a show like ours for 5 days a week. Tim has been very gracious and cool about this choice. So I'm excited to be a part of all three of these projects. I'm excited to remain moving forward with my best friend, longtime co-producer and co-owner of Darkness Radio and Beyond the Darkness. And we will continue to bring you our style of show on the weekends and on Tuesday. So you've got 7 days of paranormal. You've got 1 day of True Crime Tuesday. And all of that information is available at darknessradio.com. So you can check it out for yourself. And remember, Monday through Friday, midnightinthedesert.com. You'll be able to listen to us off the live stream there. That's a quick update and catching up. It's a pleasure and an honor to be stepping into the shoes that Art Bell left and Heather Wade left. And I wish her all of the success in the world. I know grieving is very tough. And when you lose somebody you're close to, and he was a mentor and from what I'm understanding, a father-like figure to her, this was very rough and very hard for her to deal with. But because they had such an expansive audience that were paying to be members of the full program, they needed a host that could step in and take over. So that's it. I wish Heather the best in the world. And if she truly does relaunch a new program, I will let you guys know when it airs so you can check it out. I think that that is great. Variety is a spice of life, and getting to hear somebody else's viewpoints and the way that they handle an interview is fantastic, because that's what keeps our guests interesting and keeps pushing them so that they look at different aspects. As many of us hosts across the paranormal radio realm have different ways of approaching these stories. So we wish all the best in the world to Heather, and thank you guys for all the love and support that I've gotten already regarding Midnight in the Desert, and I hope you'll keep checking it out. All right, tonight we're joined by a good friend of the show, and he's got a brand new book out. Von Braschler is with us. Von, this is an interesting book because you've written this in a narrative form, like a novel, but it's truly based on real experiences that you went through. Is that correct?
Yes, I didn't know quite what to call it. It is it's like a novel. It's like a told in the first person. It is like a true story novel. And it's about my best friend who actually went through hospice and went through kind of a life transition. And so I was able to put some pieces together and pieces that I'd gathered much earlier in my life. And it didn't seem to click till I met Deb and we needed that information. And my earlier books on time travel, this is the third book on time travel. I call it a time travel book. It's developing a new sense of time and space.
And that's what it is. Beyond time and space, beyond life and death, moving in the light, the Deb Bennett story. We'll have a link up to that book. You can go check it out at the Killer Deals link at darknessradio.com. Von, let me ask you, I mean, you've been researching and educating yourself for years. Death, this is something that comes to us all. The idea of the end of our physical form and this, and it's quite alarming. You know, we just lost Art Bell. I lost my mother, 18 months ago. My wife lost her mother, going on 9, 10 months ago. And it's hard to process that. And as someone who has had a lifelong fear of death, I'm always interested in these type of books to get some new comprehension, new ways to look at this and maybe make a connection that will ease the pain and suffering for people suffering through grief and ease the pain and suffering for people that are afraid of death. So I applaud your work in coming forward with a book like this. To catch our listeners up and get a little bit of background on you, as you mentioned, this is your third book on kind of the basis of time travel. Give us a little history, if you would, about you and what brought you and your interests to this form of the metaphysical world.
Right. Well, I'd always had an interest in time. It's been a fascination with me. And I've always had an interest in light. And it occurred to me finally, reading Einstein over about 55 times, that the two are interlinked. So if I'm talking about light, I'm talking about time. I'm talking about time and space, and it's all the same thing. And I mean, this is really Deb's book. I just wanted to bring this book out just for Deb and for Deb alone. It's Deb Bennett's story, and Deb Bennett was a woman who lived in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and she was my roommate, and she went through this terrible thing called life transition at a very young age. But my experience with time and space didn't seem to click for me until Deb came along, and then I remembered what this mysterious man told me on the telephone years before. And maybe I should start the story there, because that's the only place that makes any sense to start it.
All right. Let's start there then.
I was on the staff of the Theosophical Society National Headquarters in Wheaton, Illinois. And this was a few years before I met Deb. And I had just taken the place of a fellow who actually he just died too about a month ago. And his name was Clarence Pettersson. Pete Pettersson lived to be an old man. He was in his 90s when he died. And he had been long looking for someone to relieve him so he could retire. And he continued to be, useful for a long time after that in the book industry and the Theosophical Society. But I was on board in Pete's office about, 6-8 months or maybe a year after I'd taken over and started his job. I started getting these mysterious phone calls, and they would ring through to me, and a man with a very thick Indian accent who didn't speak extremely good English. He sounded very, very old, and he kept saying, "I need to talk to you about taking one of my lightning tours to India." I said, "Lightning tour to India?" I said, "Geez, I just started this job. I'm really, really busy. We just started a self-syndicated radio program. We launched a magazine, had all this thing going, and the publication and the marketing of the books we were doing at the time." And he said, "Yes." He said, "I usually take these in late August or early September. It's the best time of the year. And these are group tours, and I guarantee that it will change your life forever." And I said, "Well, that sounds very exciting, but it's just simply impossible." I said, "You must be calling for Pete Patterson." I said, I have his phone extension in his office, and I'll bet you're calling for Pete." No, I'm calling for you, sir." And I don't really know you. What is your name?" And he said, "Well," he said, "you know, that's not really important." He said, "Well, we'll talk again. You think about it." He called me three times. And every time he would go over the same thing. You know, the third time he called, he said, "Well, it's a shame you can't go." He said, "Too bad." He said, "But I will tell you this, and I tell this to all my students. You must learn to meditate in the light." "Meditate in the light." I said, "That sounds good. I wouldn't do it in the dark." He said, No. You misunderstand my point." He said, "I want you to begin meditating in the early morning light beside water." I said, "Any particular kind of water?" He said, "Running water is best, but a still pond will do." And I said, "Well, we have a pond in the back here, and I could get up early and lay on a blanket and meditate in the light." He said, "You do that, and you will see profound differences." He said, "You know, you learn to live in the light and move in the light. You learn to meditate in the light and be in the light, and you be in the light." And I said, "Okay." And I said, and he didn't call again. I thought, you know, this is really odd. So I went across the street to the main building, and I interviewed everybody who I thought might have been able to fake his voice. I thought this is some kind of a joke, right? And no, they all looked at me like, "No, I have no idea what you're talking about." They gave me that incredible look, you know, like, "I have no clue what you're talking about." Now, if somebody was trying to fool me, they would have, like, probably cracked a smile or a little twinkle in their eye. No. So finally, I went to the woman who was the receptionist, and I said, "Did you forward these calls on these at these following times?" It was usually early in the morning. And she said, no, they must have come straight through to you." I said, "Well, this is odd." He said, "Well, he takes a lot of, he trains people in meditation in the light beside the water, and he takes people on lightning tours." Now, we had a bookstore down below of the publishing house, and the manager at that time, Shirley Spears, who also died of cancer shortly after that. Everybody in this story, practically but me, dies of cancer at a young age. Everybody, including the hospice workers. Huge synchronicity.
Yeah.
Huge synchronicity.
Does that make you a little nervous as you're watching every one of these people involved develop cancer and pass away?
No.
Okay.
I figure I'm some kind of a witness for these people.
I guess, right.
Anyway, I go downstairs and I talk to Shirley and I say, "You know, I don't know exactly what I'm looking for, but I'm looking for a man who takes lightning tours of India." "Lightning tours of India?" I said, he does meditation in the light." He said, "Well, all of the meditation books written by masters and by Indian mystics are off in the back there." And she points me in the direction. I walk right up to the book that's facing out. I look at it, and I flip it over, and I start to read about this. He says, "This is a man in India. He lived a long, long life, and he was famous for his lightning tours of India, where he would introduce people to Eastern mysticism and Eastern spiritual science. He taught a technique called meditating in the light." And then I'm reading a little more, and he had a couple of books on meditation and living in the light. And then it said, and he died on this day, So I was actually getting spirit communication from beyond the grave. And I thought, I'm not telling this story to anybody.
Well, secret's out, Vaughn. You're telling the story.
I know. You know, it's like my last book, Dave. I didn't really want to tell the story. And then I said, you know, Deb's story needs to be told for Deb. So I'm doing this just for Deb. So anyway, I start doing this meditation.
I want to know, first of all, you're acting very matter of fact about this. You just get this bombshell that you were getting information, Vaughn, from a dead man.
Yeah.
The other side was communicating with you, and you're just all like, okay. Well, anyway, then I had a ham sandwich. I mean, to the rest of the world, this sounds...
My life has kind of been like this, Dave, from a young age. And, you know, I'm one of these people like, go on. You know, I'm one of the people that when they see the UFO, they say, I'm not going to mention this to anybody. You
okay.
Know? I just keep going on. Like it's, that's the way it is.
But how does your mind process...
That's the way it is.
I understand that you can't, you might not want to talk about it, but how does your mind start to process that information that you just realize that you received very deep, very meaningful information from the other side?
Well,
do you start questioning does that become part of the conversation internally?
That was part of the conversation. That was definitely part of the conversation. When you get spirit communications, I think of any sort, and later on I play with the Kirlian camera and I start having weird things like this happen all the time. And everybody around me would see odd things. And it's like, well, you just say, well, I guess I was supposed to hear this. Or maybe it just like, it just came to me. Like my teacher, Lewis Gettner, used to get these communications. He called them from the spirit realm, and they would be like earth energies, you know, like spirits, you know, like and he thought, well, you know, I'm just, he went over to Findhorn and found they were getting the same information at the same time. They were like broadcast faxes, you know. So I'm thinking like, well, it wasn't just for me. But he called me on the phone. He dialed my number. I mean, somehow he got my number. And, of course, these calls weren't recorded. So, anyway, time went by, and I kind of forgot the technique. But I did remember that it was important to meditate in the early morning light. And now I can see the value of that because the property of light varies, and light is travel. And if you meditate in the light correctly, you could actually transcend time and space. You know, it is a technique. It is a samadhi mystic technique and meditation. But years went by before I really was able to put it to a lot of good use. And that was when I met Deb. And Deb was dying of cancer. She showed up and she was at my house and she wanted a place to live. And she had kind of a bad life. She'd had cancer, a brain tumor. And she was young. She was 32. And she had gone through years of remission. Well, she had the cancer for many years, and then she went through like 7 years of remission. So it was like 7 plus 8. So for 15 of her 32 years had been spent either with cancer or in remission. And she showed up. She said, I'm clear now. You know, and I looked at her. I said, I don't think so. It's like she, you know, I could like read her aura. I mean, it was like gray. It was like gray. And meant she had an unhealthy aura. And for those people who can read auras, you know, a black aura means you're at death's door. Gray means you're quite sick, and depending on the shade of gray. Well, she said, no, I'm good now. Well, you know, we went on for several months like that, her telling me how good she was and how healthy she was, and she was ready to start life again, and everything was turned around, and then she started like missing steps when she'd walk. She'd stumble, and she said, well, I have a cold. But I questioned her, and I said, you've been through an awful lot in your life. I said, do you get tested periodically? She said, yes, I go to a clinic every 6 months. And she told me where it was, and they did various things. They would part of it was they would actually do a CAT scan. And so she said, so I'm fine. Turned out, you know, that she hadn't been going to these tests. She must have on some level known she was ill. And she just couldn't walk very well and stumbled a lot. And then she had trouble at work. And I got a call from some of her workers and coworkers. She worked at Dayton Hudson, Roseville, in the cosmetic counter. And they said, you know, really worried about her friend. And I said, well, she says she has a cold. She says, why is it cold? I said, well, you call us back if you think you have any thoughts on this. So right. I quizzed her. I said, hey, you know, if you have a cold, you should be getting medication. She said, oh, yeah, I'm going to go down to Bober Drugs and on Summit. It's closed now, I think, and get some medication. And I said, you know, it doesn't look like a cold. I don't hear you feel. You don't sound congested. You don't cough. You don't sneeze. She said, oh, no, I'm perfectly fine. I'm very healthy. I take health food, you know, and I do exercises. And I just knew something was wrong. So we had an intervention, and we all got together, her friends and her co-workers at myself, my house, our house, and we said, you know, you need to go in and get tested. So we took her to Fairview South. And, oh, she was riddled with brain cancer. So they asked, what do you want to do? And her parents said, you know, she's been through this. This is it. We should make her final passing comfortable. And, oh, I said, no. We have to try the operation. And, of course, what are surgeons going to tell you? Well, there's a slight chance we could get it. Well, they couldn't get it. And then we were stuck. And then what to do? And we put her through rehab at Sister Kenny's. Of course, it was no rehabilitation. That was just marking time until we found a hospice bed.
Vaughn, was she kind of resigned to the fact that she was dying, that this was it? Or was she still trying to... I mean, I know she's keeping a stiff upper lip for you, which is what my mother did. She didn't let me know how bad the cancer was. And, oh, I'm going to beat this. I'm going to dance at my great-granddaughter's, you know, wedding, all the while knowing just how bad she really was. Do you believe that she believed she was going to get better, or she was just trying to comfort you that she was going to get better?
I think she was in a state of denial on a very personal ego level. Physically, that's where she was. Now, I think her spirit knew she was sick. I think deep down, she knew she was quite sick, and she didn't want to face it. She just didn't want to face it. And when we went to, you know, the hospital and we knew how bad it was, I went through her things and I found out that she did not have a CAT scan on her last visit. So they missed it. Now, I think it's really interesting that she apparently, you know, talked him out of postponing or skipping the CAT scan, because I think she didn't want to hear the words.
Right.
You know, so I went through a period where I wanted to blame the doctors that it was supposed to be testing her periodically. And, you know, I was angry. And, you know, I kept saying, fight on. And everyone said that. And then finally I thought of this old Indian mystic that used to call me on the phone, this crazy old man from India. And I said, you know, I think, Deb, I know a way to help you. I said, are you willing to try? And I said, there are little meditation exercises. You just squeeze my hand. She could hardly speak. Squeeze my hand. And I said, I'm going to move your bed a little closer to the light. And these are called meditations in the light. You don't have to do anything. You just lie on your back. This is a meditation. You're perfectly fine lying on your back, which is absolutely true. These are meditations you don't necessarily need a perfect lotus for. You can sit in a chair and do them. So, I mean, they were designed for like sitting beside a running stream, basically, right, in the morning light. So we move her bed a little closer to the windows, and the love streams falls upon her. And I said, now I want you to become, get a feel for the light with your eyes. I want you to start bringing the light into your eyes and closing your eyes and holding it and then building the light and then amplifying it and actually pumping it up. We want the light to be more electric. So we got into something in Hindu science, they call this tattva, where you're actually like building color light. You're actually taking the light and transforming it into a more intense light. And it's got to be really bouncy electric. For instance, yellow, if you wanted to go with metal energy, yellow light would bounce really, really bright. It would be really bold. Orange, you know, if you want to deal with solar plex area, orange would be like, it comes in like pastel, the way people see auras. But then it gets, you focus on it, you focus your intent on it, and you what you do is you exercise your will center, and you start bumping it up. Now, in angel mythology, they talk about this thing called effulgence. And what angels do as perfect beings of light is that they have the ability to build up the light within them. They take the light and they can channel the light. We don't so much do that. We're light beings, but we have these kind of boxes that we live in, and the boxes leak. So I call us the angels that leak, okay, if you will. All right. We leak light. So what I did with Deb was we got a good feel for taking in the light and then build it up through metal imagery. So a lot of this is like based on the theory of consciousness being ever present in the universe and light being ever present in the universe and consciousness of light being kind of like opposite sides of the same coin. So the idea is that you can take your thought power and develop a thought form and the power, and it actually takes shape. Consequently, using thought form, you can actually take the light within you and then focus your intent on it using the power of your will, exercising the abdominal area, if you will. You can pump it up and you can take the light and then you could start to make it like yellow, orange, green, blue, indigo. So we did this until she could get to blue. And I said, now that's a cool place. And now the last thing we're going to do is we're going to take it up to kind of indigo, which is a very spiritual color. And I wanted her to get familiar with building the light and holding the light. And then we started doing some imagery together. There were meditations where she would actually open doors and walk through the doors. So people out there who might be familiar a little bit with, say, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, where you kind of practice, you know, the transition. So it's not so abrasive when you physically die. You actually have some sense of how to get from here to there. So we started these exercises where she'd open doors, walk into the new area, which was filled with darkness. And I'd say, bring the light. I said, now make the light yellow. Now make it orange. So we go into different rooms, and finally we got to where she got to a place that through about three doorways that was very cool and very relaxing. And that's where we settled on the blue. And she finally got to where she could make this trip on her own, doing this imagery and moving in the light and opening doors, filling with light and feeling the healing energy in the light. She felt very, very comfortable. She could do this on her own. And she couldn't talk toward the end. She just squeezed my hand. So finally, I said, you know, you can do this on your own, Deb. I said, you know, you're not bound to this bed. And I said, and furthermore, Deb, you're not going to die. I said, you're going to walk out of here. You can't put, you know, get on the, put your feet on the ground and walk. But you're going to keep walking through those doors and you're going to get where you want to go. I said, because you can control light and you can move anywhere through time, through space, anywhere you want moving through these doors. And I said, you're going to be okay, aren't you? She squeezed my hand and I said, can you do this yourself, Deb? She said, for the first time in months, she spoke. She said, yes. And at that point, I went into the sister who ran the hospice in St. Paul. She was one of the Hawthorns, which is an interesting story because she died young of cancer. And I said, sister, I said, Deb is ready. I said, she's ready. She says, she's ready? Because she said, Deb's job when she comes to this hospice is to die. And she said, okay. And Deb was dead shortly thereafter. But I have no fear in making a statement, no worries in saying that Deb just kept on walking. In fact, the proof of that was just about the time she died. I wasn't there exactly when she died, but I knew when she died because she came to my house. And she walked down the stairs, and she played with her cat, and she had this pink ribbon. And she was playing with this pink ribbon. She always asked me, how is Wizard? How is Wizard? She said, I wouldn't have made it through cancer the first time without Wizard. Take care of Wizard. He's a very special cat. She had this pink ribbon she was holding in the air, this really wide pink ribbon. And then it fluttered down and the cat knocked it. And then she took the ribbon, she put it in a wicker basket, pet the cat, and walked back up the stairs. Disappeared. So anyway, after she died, and I saw that, I was kind of amazed. And I ran upstairs. And I looked through her things, couldn't find pink ribbons. I looked in the closet in the hallway, and she had been making Christmas presents with pink ribbons. And that's where it was. And furthermore, I looked in the wicker basket where her cat was, and there was a pink ribbon. It wasn't there before. Hmm. So the day after she died, or that night rather, I heard music coming from her room. And that was really odd because her parents had come and taken the stereo out and the television out and all her clothes and everything. It was empty. And I stood by the doorway. I said, I'm hearing her music. And I thought, do I dare go in? Finally, I opened the door. It was empty and the music stopped. So we had a ceremony where we carried her casket out to the graveyard, and the thing was so light. I thought, where is she? Where is she? And that next weekend, I went out there to go visit her grave, and I'm walking along, and I hear clearly inside my head her voice. She said, you won't find me here, Vaughn. I'm not here. I think that people have this idea of death. That's all wrong. Nobody dies. We all continue. Life is an endless circle. It just keeps going around and around and around. And we never really die. We just go through a state of transition. And Deb learned how to do that really, really well. And she learned how to do it from a voice from a man who had died and started making phone calls explaining how to walk in the light. And it's really quite simple, these exercises. So finally they said, well, you told a nice story about your friend. This is my publisher at Shanty Publishing in California. She said, but I think people need to know how to do the exercises. So she said, add a chapter with the exercises. So I did. We did them in the same sequence that I did with Deb. They seemed to work for Deb. I think that people have this crazy idea of death.
And well, and just so I can ask you this.
Really dies.
I want to get into that. And you mentioned that this worked for Deb, but then, of course, you know, you talk about how you walked her through this, but then she died. So for people that are listening, how did that work for Deb? What worked for Deb regarding what you taught her.
Yes.
We have to take a break. We'll come back. We'll ask that question.
Okay.
We'll get the answer. Our guest, Von Brashler. Stay tuned. You're listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
Tonight, we're moving in the light with our guest, Von Brashler. And Von, it's a touching story you shared, and it's a narrative, and I let you just speak from your heart to share the story. But I do want to know, for the people that are like, oh, well, he taught her this program that was taught to him through this spirit world, through the other side, but she still died. This wasn't some healing miracle. What did she get from this, and what was able to help her from the lessons that you were able to share with her?
She got everything from this, Dave. I mean, the whole idea that our life is just simply a physical existence is, I mean, there's an expiration date on every one of us when we're born, but life goes on. I mean, it's not a matter of how long your body's going to last, because your body isn't eternal. I mean, it's kind of obvious to say, but I always think of, I compare people in cars, if that's silly, I'm sorry, but it's like when you get a really old car, and I have a lot of old cars, The transmission goes, the engine goes, and you say, well, gosh, you got to get a new car. Sometimes you just take the motor out and you put it in another car, you know, but it's like we don't try to keep it going forever. I mean, the old vacuum wears out, you know, but there's a spirit in us that goes on and on and on. So what did Deb get? Did she get healed? Absolutely, she got healed. And in the most profound way, because she now has absolute freedom. This woman can move anywhere. I mean, she's not on a track anymore. She can come back if she wants. She can, you know, continue as a spirit. I mean, she has absolute freedom of mobility through time and space. She's transcended time and space, basically. She learned the trick of this thing. I finally figured it out. You learn to be in the light, you learn to live in the light, you learn to meditate in the light, you learn to move in the light, and then finally, you become the light. And actually, when you think about it, we are all beings of light. I think there are three things that people need to think about themselves. They're like the three secrets we don't like reveal to ourselves, or we don't think about them very much. One is, we are all beings of light, you know, and light is everywhere, and light transcends time and space. We are all consciousness, you know, we're beings of consciousness, which goes on and on and on, you know. Thought forms transcend physicality. They go on and on and on. And we're all, every one of us, on a hero's journey of discovery. And it's, the question is, what are you going to discover? You know, I've long tired of trying to find the ideal, you know, formula for making nachos, or finding the best movie, or the best music, or, you know, it's there are so many more things in life to be discovered. My friend Deb discovered something really profound. It's just really great. I think this Indian man somehow knew that I needed this information later. I have this sense that information comes to you when you need it, if you're willing to listen. Now, this information didn't make a whole lot of sense to me when I first heard it. Yes, I started meditating in light, but I didn't see the profound impact of that for years until I started studying time travel. I realized the key component was light. Now, people who study thought forms and thought power and the research of Dr. Emoto and hidden messages in water know that thought can actually transform things and transcend things, and there's a lot of evidence in Eastern spiritual science literature to indicate that people who become very good at controlling thought forms and thought power can actually begin, they can actually be two places in the same time because they've actually learned how to manifest things. So the key to this is learning really to creatively visualize and actually manifest a new reality. Deb found freedom.
And that's powerful. That's a great moment and bit for you to share in that. She found the freedom. And I think that's what so many of us, especially myself, with this overwhelming fear of death, and I hear from listeners all the time that relate to that with me, that we're looking for that. How can we come to terms? Not just that the idea that life ends, but that there is more and that we can become more. Because in a cynical world that we live in right now, Vaughn, it's real easy to realize religion as we once knew it is no longer the cornerstone of our civilization, and beliefs and ideology and theology has quivered and shaken and Atlas shrugged. Yeah. And all of a sudden, people are seeking answers elsewhere. And there's a lot of people that feel unease because we don't know that the answer is really in religion. There's not a heaven. There's not a place to go. There's, you know, but if we can find a way to realize that we can tap into this energy and transcend our physical form, that's something that brings a lot of hope, I think, not only to myself, but many other people. Now, you refer to this as a time travel story as well. And I found something interesting in what you just said to me. You said you were given the information long ago and didn't know that you would need it at this point. But in the other realm, in the other side, time, from my understanding, is irrelevant. So when this call was made to you, when this information was given to you, it was not given to you necessarily at that point to remember going forward. It was a message that just came in, and you happened to pick up that phone line that day. And it could have come the week before you met this woman, and it would have been fresher to you. But time is irrelevant, and it still was there, and it still played a part in your life, and you carried that voicemail with you. You know, not the physical voicemail, but you carried that voicemail messages that you received with you and were able to help somebody else with it. So in a sense, that is another form of time travel. They knew what was coming, and they prepared you for it.
I had to have time to actually process the information. I had to write the other books on time travel. And here's the odd thing. There's so much synchronicity in this. When Deb first moved in, she would come in and she'd say, "What are you working on?" I said, "Deb, I'm going to write a book." I hadn't yet written one of my books. And she says, "What is it? What is it going to be called?" I said, "I want to write a book on called Moving in the Light." And it took me a long time after she died to actually write a book called Moving in the Light, because, you know, it just stopped everything for me. But I had to have the time to actually process this from the time this guy gave me the information. I had to internalize it. I had to personally experience it. I had to think about it intellectually. And then I had to have the right opportunity. So, I think what you say makes a lot of sense. But I also think that people forget that we're here to learn. We are all on a journey, and the journey is never ending. The journey will never end. It won't end when you stop breathing. It'll continue. And what you learn here will help you later, and then later, and then later. And the journey, we're never through with this journey of discovery. And it's a journey of self-discovery. It's about us. Because we learn about ourselves, we learn about the greater universe. We're just the universe and microcosm. It's all the same, you know.
Talk to me a little bit about your idea of time travel. You know, we've been talking and bandying it about for a while that it doesn't necessarily have to be a physical thing where you step into the quantum leap accelerator and vanish, or you jump into the time machine as H.G. Wells built and visit those points. That, you know, we believe that a lot of what we're doing, and when we're seeing ghosts, is a form of time travel. We're not necessarily seeing displaced spirits. We're seeing through veils and portals of time.
There is no sense of time and space as we experience it here. Here it's very linear. It's like, you know, we think we can put our hands around it, which is kind of like silly, because you really can't, time unfolds itself to us as need be. And we think we have such control over time, and to some degree we do. I mean, you can learn to compress time, you can learn to speed time up through time perception exercises. I mean, I used to do this thing where you get somebody to stare at a clock until it seems to stop. Well, yeah, you could make time for you stop, but not for anyone else. Once again, we're on personal journeys of discovery. And the big thing is that it just goes on and on and on. There's no time. It's timelessness. And yes, absolutely, we see all the time phantoms from the past and the future popping in because, you know, they just somehow, it kind of meshes, you know, like, I mean, think of like, a good example is I'm on an island where we have magnetic disturbance, you know. There are places in the earth that have magnetic disturbances, near Bimini, you know, in the Bermuda Triangle. They have all kinds of strange occurrences, you know, and things will kind of like disappear in time, you know, and then they'll reappear, you know, and it's like, where did it come from? And it's like, my favorite is like, where the heck did the socks go? Now you look under the bed and they're not there. Then I come back tomorrow and they're under the bed. It's like, how the heck did that happen? So I think all the time things are like, little things like this are happening to us, you know? And we say, well, that was odd. Well, yeah, it wasn't.
Right. But it's the fact you think that things are constantly shifting around us and our consciousness or awareness is shifting as well. You know, you brought up something really interesting, but the fact that you can slow down time, but you can't slow it down for others. I'm at that age. No. You know, I hit 50 this last year and man, I don't know where the last 49, you know, years and 11 months went. And I sit there thinking, and every day it just bleeds by faster. And I'm closer to 51 and all of this. Yeah. And then we started to look at, and I've been trying to work on this, is actually learning to live in a moment. And as a perfect example for listeners, again, if you've ever been in a car accident, as soon as you realize it's coming, time slows down. And you can see and witness and have a full conversation in what probably is a span of 3 to 10 seconds that you could have never had. And that's because for that moment, you're not worried about doing the laundry. Yeah. You're not worried about dinner. You're not worried about texting. You're not worried about, you know, the next episode of the Avengers movies. You're just in that moment living it. And time becomes, it bows to you. At that moment, you become the master of it because you're fully immersed in it.
You fully occupy the moment. And then the moment seems to last forever. You can hold it suspended in air forever. And it's like, yes, you can have an accident, and it's like 1 second takes forever because you're not thinking about the past, you're not thinking about the future, you're not processing information. You are fully present in that moment. And it's a magnificent thing to experience that moment to moment, living fully in every moment. You know, you can practice this, and it really will work. And a lot of people experience it kind of accidentally when they dream, and they, like, dream a whole life, you know, and they've only been dreaming for like 20 minutes. It's like, how did that happen? You know, because in this, outside of our physical life, you know, in our consciousness, there is, in the spirit world, there is so much that can happen. I mean, infinite amount of things can happen. You can live a whole life in like 10 minutes, you know, because time isn't the same there. It can go, it's timeless, absolutely timeless.
I want people to know that too, and I want to know how they can access that, because we don't want to be in a moment of trauma. We don't want to be in a moment of negativity to finally try to grasp that concept. So is this the steps that you give people in this book of kind of walking through these different planes, will that start to help them master their time? Will that teach them how to start to become one and not be bombarded by all of the extracurricular, you know, energy out there?
Yeah, absolutely. And I started doing workshops because people wonder about this technique. And I'd send people right back to the source material. It might seem that I publish New Age books, Dave, but I don't like New Age literature. I like the classics, go to the Yoga Sutras. Yoga Sutras tell you how to focus on things and make time stop. They tell you how to manifest things. You know, read a classic like Thought Forms by Annie Besant, Charles Ledbetter. That's a book that's been around for over 100 years, and it's only like 70-80 pages. And that shows you how to actually manifest things from your thoughts. And then Annie Besant wrote a sequel to that called Thought Power, where you actually take your thoughts and actually they take form. Some of the literature by a New Zealand minister, Free Hodson, shows how to actually control your thoughts, and it's a matter of getting a hold of your consciousness training, expanding your consciousness, and getting in control of your higher thoughts. That's the key. And you can absolutely practice this. And it's really good to practice it because, you know, you can use it at moments when you're sick or moments when you want to, like, expand time. I mean, I drove through Montana at 3 o'clock in the morning with no gas and in a blizzard. And it's like, you know, I got through in like, I don't know, 10 minutes. You can't drive across Montana in 10 minutes. Now, at some point, this stuff actually becomes very, very practical to know. There are exercises you do in Thought Forms, Thought Power, that border on meditation. In fact, that's why I always send people to the Yoga Sutras, because if you go through that book, it starts out where you're doing very simple meditations, and then it gets into creative visualization, then it gets into manifestation. And the last third of Yoga Sutras is all on magic. Now, what we call, you know, practical magic is no different from what other people call transformation. It's learning to take something and make it into something else. And that's what you can do if you can control your thought forms. We all have thought forms.
I'm curious, can you tell me this? When you talk about thought forms, all right, do you believe then when we experience something, when you hear the claim of my grandmother came to me and she said this, or even your friend Deb came to you and was playing with the cat.
Yeah.
Do you believe that was truly Deb, or was that the thought form that you processed in order to help with your own grieving process? That you have that ability to create something from a memory and love and energy that you're not really calling upon her ghost. Okay. All right. But do you think that some people...
I'll say that, and there's no shame in looking at it the other way, because it's perfectly legitimate. But in the case of Deb, she revealed something to me that I'd never imagined before, that she was actually making these secret Christmas gifts with pink ribbon.
Right, but hear me out on this.
That was mind-boggling.
But hear me out on this. You were connected with Deb. You walked Deb through a way to connect with universe, to connect with energy.
Yep.
The same energy that you swim in on a regular basis, the wading pool of energy around us. So couldn't it be said that what you were actually experiencing wasn't the ghost? It was the echo memory tied with that connection that you have with her, that, you're seeing the pink ribbon, you're seeing these things, but what that is you're picking up on her genetic memory that's been left in this tide pool that you both immerse yourself in.
No, I don't think so. I do admit that I have to be a part of it. You know, I have to have a link to her. And since I had a link to her, I could see her. You know, if she came in the house and it was somebody else, they probably wouldn't have seen her. And I think this kind of like makes people shake their heads and say, oh, the poor guy is daft. He just imagined all this, you know, because somebody else could not. Now, it's true. You know, we see like phantom spirits, or some people say ghosts, and some people see them and some people don't. Well, I think you have to kind of be, and it's basic communication. You need a sender, a willing sender. You need a medium, a message, and you need a willing receiver. And unless you're a willing receiver, you're not really a participant and you're not going to see it. So I knew Deb and I was plugged into Deb. So when she showed, I was there.
All right. All right. And again, you know, that's an interesting perspective on it. And I respect that as well. I just wonder how many times we're calling upon something that is nothing more than a creation. And it's not any less amazing or powerful because it truly shows you how powerful we are as a person, that we can call forth this memory, this ghost, that, you know, thought form that isn't necessarily true, but it's something there that we need to help guide us or to give us closure and comfort.
Let me give you another example. Years ago, I lived on Mount Hood in Oregon. I wrote about this previously. We might have discussed it on your show when I spoke about ghosts and being a reluctant ghost hunter. And there would be phantom spirits that would walk out of a barn every night at dusk. And as I'm coming down the mountain going toward Portland, I would see these people dressed in black, and they looked like they were from like 150 years ago. They were pioneers coming out of an old barn carrying pitchforks, carrying shovels. They were carrying tools that you don't see nowadays. They're like crude, old-fashioned tools, and they're dressed in strange, dark clothes, like black clothes, and they look like pioneers, and they look dirt poor and dirt tired, and they're walking out and they're filing out of the barn and then they disappear. And I've actually talked to other people that have seen them. So it's like, not my creation. I didn't know these people. I mean, and other people saw them.
And that I understand. I'm talking about more when we're trying to call upon, you know, the ghost of a loved one. We're looking for that closure. I think that what you were seeing was, I don't necessarily believe that they're ghosts. I'm having a real hard time after 13 years of kind of immersing myself in this, of believing that it's displaced human souls just trudging about trying to find meaning. I think you're seeing
very seldom it is.
Right. I think you're seeing a replay. I think you're seeing an energy pattern.
Yeah, you see a replay. Yeah, you see, you know, like that was a replay, and it's like, but Deb only did this once, and it's like she played around with it for a couple of 3 days until she felt she wanted to move on, and then she was never ever in any way sighted or hurt again that I know of. Not certainly. She didn't haunt the house. I thought she was going to haunt the house. She didn't haunt the house. She didn't come back to visit her cat. I never saw a replay of that again. It was
right, and we may not need to, right? Once we've had that one experience, once we've lived in that moment, for you, you're a strong soul. You're a strong mind and a strong person. That was all you needed. So it is interesting. I'm interested in how people process these different ideas. But I think that I think we're very close to time travel and really understanding it, maybe not in a physical form, but in a theoretical form. And I think there are a lot of cool tests out there that I'm willing to try, and I'm going to talk about it maybe on the show here in the future, Vaughn. I'd love to have you back on an experiment we can try with people to see if we can influence the past.
Oh, yeah. I think you can. Well, yeah, I think this is... this is the time. This is we're absolutely there, you know, as far as our consciousness development as human beings now is to understanding, you know, time and space a little better. You know, it's really not what we thought of it. It's really not. It's very, very different. But I also think that, you know, it would be cruel and unthinkable and probably karmically dangerous to personally be calling back the spirits of dead loved ones. I think that's really unfair because they need to move on. Deb's going to go on. She's going to have a wonderful life somewhere, do something else, and she doesn't need to hang around my house or the cemetery or a cat anymore. She's got more. Yeah.
Do you think that when it's your time, though, when it's your time to transition, Vaughn, do you believe that you'll be immersed into that river of souls and see all of the people that you once knew? Or do you think you're just jettisoned out and you're on to the next level wherever it is?
Well, I'm going to be in that river of souls for a while. I mean, and you can decide where you want to go after that. If you have enough awareness, you know, you can decide what you're going to do after that. I mean, I did these exercises with Deb. I went far enough in the light, opened enough doors with Deb. I kind of saw the other side, you know, and since then, you know, I've kind of walked in the River of Souls, and I've talked to a lot of dead people, and a lot of them are terribly, terribly lost, you know, and they quite don't quite know. It's like Deb knows. I mean, it's like, I'm going to know exactly where, you know, what's up, and there's going to be no confusion. I mean, it's good to practice. We're all going to physically, you know, depart this life we're now living, this physical life. We need to be ready. We need to be aware of what's going on, and we need to walk straightforward through it, you know, without fear, without hesitancy, without confusion, you know, and if you can, without pain. I mean, part of this, you know, in meditation, you can learn to do a meditation where you can, you know, minimize pain. That's a wonderful thing too, because when you learn to visualize, we're really talking about visualizing here. When you learn to visualize, yes, you learn to manifest, if you do it right, what is the outcome, and you can control your pain, there's a lot of control we have that people don't realize.
Is it good to control that pain?
Very powerful.
Is it good to control that pain? Is it good to try to control that pain, or does the pain help us in life as well? Sometimes I feel like
the pain
is necessary sometimes for me to learn to break and change and not always be stuck physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally in a place.
You're a wise man, Dave. That's why you have the show. And absolutely.
Hang on. Let me get my wife on the phone. Can you tell her that, Vaughn?
Absolutely. I'll record it for you in another language.
Oh,
but
great.
So she won't get it. I'm sorry. People need to feel the pain. You know, we tend to try to mask pain. We try to hide the symptoms of pain. You need to know the pain. You need to understand the pain. You need to learn from the pain. Sometimes people karmically have to go through pain. You know, we can't, and death is the ultimate cure for what ails you physically. It absolutely will. I mean, I believe in that. I mean, I could talk a little bit about the Hawthorns, these marvelous sisters who ran the hospice center. They were nurses and they were nuns, and they didn't all start out as nurses or nuns. The Hawthorns were pioneers in the hospice program. We were lucky to have one of their first programs in St. Paul, Minnesota, where Deb was. And it was started by Rose Hawthorne, who was the sister of Nathaniel Hawthorne, the early American novelist. And she, along with another woman in New York City years and years ago, wanted to start what we now call hospice for a friend who was terminally ill with cancer. And they said, there should be a place where you could just take care of these people and minimize their pain and help their transition. And so, you know, that was one of the first hospice programs in the United States, at least. And they petitioned the city of New York that they could wear what looked like religious costumes, you know, because they weren't actually, as I understand it, nurses. They were just attendants, right?
Right.
And they said, yeah, that'd be fine. So they had one patient, one bed, two nurse volunteers. And years later, they liked the fact that they were doing this, and, you know, and they petitioned the Dominican Order to become a part of them. And so the Hawthorns became part of the Dominican Order, and they became actually nuns. And now, of course, a lot of the people, I think all of the people that work in their programs of hospice are actually nurses too. Deb's nurse was a wonderful nurse, and she was a wonderful nun. And I remember when Deb was in her care, she asked me, she said, is Deb a Catholic? Because it was a Catholic, you know, facility. I said, well, Deb is no longer a Catholic. I said, she's kind of expanded her views of spirituality. And she said, Blonde, she said, when we die, we're all Catholics. And it took me a while to figure that out. We all are Catholics. We are all Lutherans. We're all Hindus. We're all whatever. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. And I asked her once, I said, let me ask you, sister. Her name is Sister Luke. Let me ask you, Sister Luke. I said, do you see yourself primarily as a nurse or as a nun? She was the head of the program. She said, Vaughn, would you please close the door? I closed the door. She said, Vaughn. She said, I'm a nurse. She said, but I get choked up when I think of Sister Luke. Mm-hmm. Because she looked at me with these steely eyes. She said, but this is where I can make the most impact working here. She said, I'm so lucky to be right here. So she herself died young of cancer. And Sister Luke went back to the mother house in New York, Hawthorne House, and she went into hospice herself. So when I went back to talk to Sister Luke about Deb, she wasn't there. In fact, the Hawthorns have given up the facility, and it's now run by another Catholic order as a hospice. As I understand it, the Hawthorns now, a lot of their work is going out to homes. This is kind of a trend in hospice today. Deb died when the hospice was kind of new. And now, this is the other thing about Deb and the sequence of these events, is after the mysterious calls from the Indian about moving in the light, I did move to Mount Hood. And I was one of the early volunteers in a program called the Mount Hood Hospice Center. It was one of the very early hospice centers, not as early as Rose Hawthorne and the Hawthorns, New York, but it was early, you know. It was in like the late 70s. And, oh, no, I'm sorry, it was in the 80s. You know, hospice was very different then. You know, people weren't sure about hospice. You know, medical people didn't believe that a lot of things that took place in hospice, you know, like pain control and talking people through life transition, was necessarily good. They should either be home with loved ones or in a hospital, preferably in a hospital. And hospice is kind of, it's a beautiful thing if it's done well. And we tried to do home hospice for Deb. We talked to the sisters at the hospice about this, and they said, you know, it takes a lot of time to do it right, and we couldn't do it. So we visited her as often as we could.
A beautiful story, Vaughn, and I always appreciate our visits and when you can stop in and share insights with us. And we'll have a link again up to your book. They can go to darknessradio.com, click on the Killer Deals link, and find it there. Vaughn, thank you very much for joining me, and I'm sure we'll be talking again in the future.
Thank you, Dave. It's been great.
Always a pleasure. That's it. We'll be back on Friday, and we will be talking with The Exorcism of Cindy Sauer. That's the topic of the day, and it's an amazing story. Cindy Sauer, our guest, will be on hand. It was featured on Destination America's A Haunting, and now you get to hear the real story behind the story. That's Friday, plus a creepy new theater of the mind. So, from Tim and Dave, be kind, love one another, and live in the moment. Enjoy all you can for as long as you can. We'll see you again right here on Friday. And I want to make a mention, tomorrow we have a very special episode that's going to air. As I mentioned, we lost a friend of our show, Brad Steiger, the author of, I think, around 170 books on the supernatural and paranormal. And Brad was a regular guest on our show over the years and always a great supporter, and would send me encouraging messages as I went through things through my life, and he will be missed. So tomorrow we will play a special Throwback Thursday episode with a couple of episodes, actually, of Brad Steiger's last visits with us on Darkness Radio. So I hope you'll be here to check that out. But a brand new show back with you on Friday here on the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Chances are you've been to the doctor recently and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Life's messy. We're talking spills, stains, pets, and kids. But with Anabay, you never have to stress about messes again. At washablesofas.com, discover Anabay sofas, the only fully machine washable sofas inside and out, starting at just $699. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics. That means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Upgrade your space today. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.